First, there are a lot of ideas that businesses and other workplaces take for granted. Things like feedback from supervisors makes a big difference in workplace performance, or work plans with measurable goals are the best way to be productive. But our next guest says those assumptions and many more are just plain wrong. He says that instead of relying on top-down practices, managers should focus on the unique strengths of their employees, be transparent, and realize that success doesn't look the same for every person. Ashley Goodall is the Senior Vice President of Leadership and Team Intelligence at Cisco. He's the co-author of the new book, 9 Lies About Work, A Freethinking Leader's Guide to the Real World, that's out today. Ashley, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be here.
We'll get into some of these 9 lies in just a minute, but big picture, you and your co-authors say there are so many things that the business world takes for granted without really challenging or examining those ideas. Why is that?
Well, the funny thing is that a lot of the things we write about in the book start off as a small good thing. So you mentioned goals, for example, and we all have this sense that if we set a goal for ourselves, that feels like a useful thing. But then very often what happens at work is we turn these small good things into big bad things by turning them into systems, if you like. And so when you take, to keep going with our example, when you take a goal which you or I set for ourselves to manifest, if you like, what's valuable to us and what we want to personally achieve, but then you turn that into a big system where goals cascade down from the top of the organization, and we're told to write our goals in alignment with the goals of the person above us, and we're told that a goal must look like this, all of a sudden they stop being ours, and they stop being useful for us as an expression of what we want to achieve.
And what does this do for workers? You're worried that people are disengaged from their jobs and ultimately, despite the best intentions of all these things, less productive. What's going on there?
Well, and I think the evidence is pretty strong, Rob, that levels of global engagement haven't changed very much in the last 20 years or so, and maybe even further back than that. And I think that we're sort of getting to a point where we've exhausted many of what has been the set of standard practices in the workplace for maybe as far back as 100 years. And I think we're at a point where people are working ever more hours. Work seems to intrude on more of our lives, if you like, than ever before. But yet at the same time, work is a more anonymous place for many of us. We don't feel seen. We don't feel understood for what is special about each of us. We don't feel that our unique contributions are called on nearly enough. And I think what we're really seeing, if you like, is a crisis in individuality in the workplace. And our workplaces, as a generalization, aren't necessarily doing enough to unlock the beautiful magic that each of us can offer.
One common theme as you go through the 9 lies in the book seems to be that there's a lot of attention paid toward fixing our weaknesses as workers or leaders to make us better. You want to see us change that. You want to see us look more at our strengths and build on those. Why is that an important change?
It's a funny one. You're right. It does run through many of the areas of the book that we sort of have a tendency when we run into something that's not working, to say, well, let's find the process step that isn't right, or let's find the shortcoming and we'll fix it. But in doing so, we sort of treat people as though people are toasters, and people aren't toasters. I mean, toasters break, you fix them. People don't work like that. People grow the most when you figure out what's working for them and how to build on that. And that's not just sort of optimistic thinking. There's actually a lot of science behind that. When you look at how the brain works, you find that brains grow by building more synaptic connections where they already have synaptic connections. We go through life becoming, if you like, more specialized, or put differently, more distinctly us. And so the way to help somebody grow is to help them understand where they are at their most powerful and how to contribute that more fully in the world that they live in. And that's very counter to the sort of toaster thinking, if you like, that we characterize in the book.
Talking to Ashley Goodall, co-author of the new book, 9 Lies About Work, A Freethinking Leader's Guide to the Real World. Well, I promised people some lies. Let's get into some of them. Ashley, lie number one in the book, people care which company they work for. Talk about that mindset.
Well, that's one of the lies. You look at it, and I think many people would look at that and go, well, hang on a second. I do care very much which company I work for, or at least I feel that I do. This is one where the evidence and the science is our guide. If you look at the choices that people make, if you look at whether people choose to stay at a given place or go someplace else, the company as a whole doesn't appear to make much of a difference in that, at least certainly compared to the team that somebody is on. So the truth is actually that people care which team they're on. And if you measure the local team experience at work and then look at what results from the quality of that experience, you find out when the team experience is great, productivity is great, innovation is great, creativity is great, collaboration is great. You find out that when that experience on the local team is not very good, none of the above happens, but also people walk out the door much more frequently. The stat at Cisco is that if I move you from one of our highest performing teams in the top half of team engagement to the bottom half, your chance of voluntarily leaving Cisco goes up by about 45%.
And that's a finding you had. There are different survey questions you run by workers, and there's more variation about worker satisfaction and that connection you're talking about within a company than there is between companies. So that company A's culture, company B's culture, doesn't matter. It's what I experience with this group I'm working with.
Exactly. Or put differently, the local experience always seems to trump the global experience of the company. I mean, we do talk a lot about company culture. To a certain extent, that's a sort of abstract idea or certainly an aspirational idea. We want our company to be about these things. We want our company to feel like this. But actually, the experience of a company every day is very, very ground level for all the people in it. And what that means is the experience of the company is the experience of a team. And again, when you go inside a company and you measure very carefully the elements of the local team experience that lead to productivity, creativity, innovation, and so on, you find out that those vary enormously inside a given company. So in fact, where our experience is variable is the local, it's the team experience, not the company culture overall.
So if I'm a manager of a small team, say at a corporation or a business, and I'm not, but if I were, how would I put this into practice? How would I make sure at least my team has these qualities?
Yeah, we include 8 questions in the book that are the best way we've ever found to measure the local team experience. And the first thing to do is to ask, if you're a manager, ask people on your team, are you playing to your strengths every day? That's one of the questions. Are you clear on expectations? Do you feel that your teammates have your back? Those are conversations that you can have, and they're marvelous conversations to have with an entire team. Do we feel that we have one another's back in this team? What would that feel like? What does it feel like when it doesn't work? Are the moments when it's been great, are the moments when it's let people down? What's really interesting is that if you use the team experience as, if you like, a yardstick of your particular team right now, then it leads to a great conversation. And the conversation is where all the beauty is, because each team is different. Each team needs to define its own rituals and habits and rhythms. But it's only by having a conversation about that deliberately that you get to build a great team.
Ashley Goodall is with us, Senior Vice President of Leadership and Team Intelligence at Cisco. He's co-author of the new book, 9 Lies About Work, A Free-Thinking Leader's Guide to the Real World. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think your workplace could change to make your job more engaging or rewarding? If you are a manager of some sort, what do you think about what you're hearing from our guest? Do you do some of the things he's talking about? Have you had these kind of conversations with people you work with? And in general, think about a job you have or have had. What makes it a good job or a bad job? Is it the overall company or organization? Is it your manager? Is it the team you work with and that local culture? Let us know what you think. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Ashley Goodall, co-author of the book, 9 Lies About Work, A Freethinking Leader's Guide to the Real World. That's out today. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there assumptions at your workplace about how best to manage people, train people, evaluate people that work at your workplace or that you think are just kind of jumping through hoops, don't help out at all? What makes a positive workplace, a positive work experience for you? If you've been a manager or are a manager or leader of some sort, what kind of insights have you gotten over the years? What works for you? What does not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls. Eric is with us in Sinsinoa. Eric, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Eric?
Well, I am a teacher, and I recently, my last school year, I worked in one PLC, a group of teachers, and I changed schools just because I didn't feel that community was there. So I think that that first lie you were talking about really rings true for me. But I was wondering if your guest had any other insights into how some of these lies might apply in schools or how they might be different.
Eric, thanks. Thanks for the call. Ashley, that's interesting because there seems to be a movement toward trying to find ways to quantitatively rate teachers more and more to evaluate their performance. Any thoughts for Eric?
Thanks for the question, Eric. The place my mind went when I heard your question was actually this question of feedback, which we also get into in the book. And you know, as we said earlier on in the conversation, we have a sort of instinct to give people feedback on their shortcomings and say, here's how you fix it. But if you look at how the brain grows, what the brain finds most helpful is actually you're saying, not here's my judgment of you, but here's my reaction to you, and here's what worked most powerfully. I think there's an interesting idea there for schools, where typically we're telling our kids how they fail to measure up. If our kids come home with an A, a C, and an F, we tend to pay most attention to the F and then to the C. And if there's any time left after supper, then we'll say good job for the A. But interestingly enough, the A is where somebody is going to build a life, if you like. The A is a sign of interest, the sign of a spark, the sign of something that could grow and blossom. So I think we might in our schools think a little bit more about A isn't the end of a conversation with a student. A is the beginning of a conversation.
Eric, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. But Ashley, what I wonder about is whether we're talking about the student with the A and the F or the employee who does something really well but has something they're doing pretty bad. If we focus on that strength, on that good stuff, does that spill over? Does that cascade over to help elevate that weak point too?
Well, so I think, you know, this is a question that we have to wrestle with. When something goes wrong, of course, a manager's got to step in and say, all right, that wasn't the outcome we were looking for. Then we have to be careful. If the thing that went wrong has a set of facts that somebody missed a fact, they didn't know something, or there's a step in a process and they missed a step, then by all means, we can say with all transparency, you got your facts wrong or you missed a step. But beyond that, we finish up saying to people in our attempts to help, basically what boils down to, you need to do it my way, or you should learn from doing it my way. And people don't learn like that. So what we want to be able to say is just to shift the language a little, particularly when things don't go as planned, and say, look, the outcome we were after was this. Were we clear on the outcome? Now then, what's your best path to that outcome? How could you get there more effectively in the future? And rather than telling people the means to a goal, we need to be super clear on what the goal is. What outcome are we all after? But then have, again, a conversation about what's your best path there, given who you are, what you know, and what you bring to the table.
Ashley, as I read through your book and listen to you, I imagine there must have been conversations at some point where you're telling people in corporate leadership somewhere about your findings, and they're saying, this all sounds touchy-feely. We need quantifiable, measurable stuff. We're a serious business. Is that pushback you get?
It certainly has been said that some of this stuff sounds, as you put it, touchy-feely. What's funny is that there is not a single touchy-feely finding in here. These are findings, if you like. These are research findings, mm-hmm. not philosophies. This is not me saying, I wish the world were a happy place and honeybees and so on and so forth. This is what happens when you look at the evidence. If you look at how brains grow, they grow best when we ask them to dream and imagine what could be, not when we tell them what's wrong. When you look at what makes for a great team, it's everybody playing to their strengths frequently. That's the finding that you come across there. When you look at what makes for excellent performance, you find that the best people aren't well-rounded. Indeed, the best people are spiky. They've figured out their own uniqueness and how to make that work for them ever harder. It's funny. I suppose we should be in some way celebrating the fact that something that feels like an encouraging message is actually a message delivered to us from looking very hard at the real world and how you might quantify it. Maybe we're not quite there yet, but maybe we'll get there soon.
Talking to Ashley Goodall, co-author of the new book, 9 Lies About Work, A Freethinking Leader's Guide to the Real World. I want to look at another of the lies. I really am interested in this one. Leadership is a thing, is the lie. And I think we've all maybe experienced that idea that somebody has leadership or they don't, or they have leadership at a certain quantity. It's almost like this magical substance that makes a good leader. What do you find when you start to look at leadership?
Well, what we do, because we think that leadership is a thing, is we try and make lists of the qualities that a leader has or should have. So we talk about, strategic ability or execution, empathy or oratory even. And we like to come up with these long lists of things and go, you know what? Leadership, the thing called leadership, is to have these things on the list, because we've looked at a lot of leaders in the world, and this is some of the stuff they seem to have generally in common, sort of, kinda. And that's where the problem starts, because then you go, well, instead of talking about an abstract, generic list of things, look at a real leader in the world, and do they have all the things on the list? And you find out that they never have all the things on the list. We give lots of examples in the book. If you want to talk about, let's pick on George Patton, famous general in the Second World War, who actually hit some of his soldiers who had PTSD. And you say, well, if Patton's either not a leader, which is clearly not true, or empathy isn't part of leadership, or compassion isn't part of leadership. You look at someone like JFK, we talk a lot about authenticity as part of leadership. You look at JFK and you say, well, he was keeping his illnesses hidden. So how is that authenticity? And as soon as you hold the lists of leadershipy things up to actual leaders in the real world, you find out that all the things on the list seem to be optional, which means what actually is there at all? To get to the truth, you say, well, leadership isn't actually about the leader. It's about the followers. The thing that all leaders have in common by definition is that they have followers. And if you can understand what it is that makes me follow someone else, what is it that makes me give my breath to another, if you like, then you're onto something. And as it turns out, it's less a list of abstract qualities than it is a person who has figured out how to be their most vivid selves in the world, how to be really, really clear about what they stand for. And that seems to be what people hook onto.
In our last couple of minutes, if somebody's out there listening and they're thinking, wow, I want to start applying these ideas to my team, whether that's a big business, a nonprofit, a school, what have you, what are some ways that they can get started in making this mindset shift?
So from all the research that we've done, the best leaders seem to be able to do two things. Best team leaders. They seem to be able to see each individual person on a team or in a school, if you like, for who they are. They're really, really good at making each individual seen and understanding how to put the best of what that individual has to offer in the service of the team, if you like. So leaders are great individualizers of the now. And then the other thing that the best team leaders seem to be able to do is to make the future universal. Here's where we all can go. Here's what we can all step into. So there's a kind of a a present tense. I see each person for who they are, and the people feel that they are seen by me and valued by me for what they bring to the table. And at the same time, we are all together supporting one another, stepping into a future that seems tangible for all of us. That's what the best team leaders seem to be able to do. They do it by paying attention to individuals, but then also by understanding what they themselves bring to the table and how where they are at their most powerful.
Do you worry that as a society, in schools, at workplaces, we're moving in exactly the opposite direction you're talking about?
I worry that we have a habit of trying to codify things and trying to make our lists, if you like, to go back to the leadership example. And by the very nature of that, what you're doing is making a list of the average performance, if you like, in a role. Because as soon as you start looking at excellence, you find it's different all over the map. So whenever we run into a competency model, they're called at work, or sometimes rubrics in our school, you get a rubric to write an essay. What we're actually codifying is adequate performance. And if we then hitch all of our systems to that, what we're systematizing is adequate average performance. And I think that's something we should be very concerned about.
Ashley, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been great to be here. Thanks so much, Rob.
That's Ashley Goodall, co-author of the new book, 9 Lies About Work, A Freethinking Leader's Guide to the Real World. That comes out today.